pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War. I'm your host, Alexei Card, joined by my co-hosts, Andy Astronaut.
Hello, hello.
And Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
Weeks. Before we get into it, our poll, the July update, the big roadmap release from CCP. We had a poll. 47% say it was good first step, but they still expect more from CCP. 37% say this is what they've been looking for. And 16% say it was not nearly enough communication. I don't know what that 16% is doing. Like, they basically gave us a roadmap for the next 4 to 6 months. Unless you're talking about, like, you really wanted to see a multi-year plan for EVE, it's difficult to imagine a better thing that they could have provided for us. But I don't know, maybe that's also, hey, things that I really wanted aren't in this roadmap.
That's what I think it is. I think that's exactly what it is.
Well, I'll tell you who's not going to miss any Rorqual buffs, and that is Test Alliance.
I don't know. They're heading out to drones, I hear. It's nice out there for Rorqual pilots, maybe.
Well, it would be if there wasn't someone chasing them, right?
Well, I mean... So, okay. The meme is Test is next. But, oh, a wild
we
dunk
do
appears.
A wild dunk dinkle. Hey, Dunk, how you doing?
Doing okay. I just been hopping in and out of kind of Diplo conversations all morning. I'm sorry, I missed
that's your, okay.
Easier pings.
Practically overnight, you turned into one of the busiest people in EVE, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a role I've avoided for a very long time, and now they have shackled me into it.
Well, let's not bury the lead here. For those uninformed who may not have seen, Dunk Dinkle is now officially the CEO. Is that the title of Brave Collective?
Right. I'm CEO of the holding corp in the Alliance. So effectively, I'm the Alliance leader.
Wow. And you've been a notable EVE personality and a major figure in Brave leadership for a very long time. Why in the past have you not taken that step?
Well, I like playing the game. I like getting out and building things and shooting things. And the higher you go into this leadership thing, the less you get to do with that and the more time you spend in Discord talking to people. And then also in real life, I already have a job where I manage a bunch of people. So I usually don't like to come home at the end of a long day of real life work and then manage people in space work even more. So I've tried to avoid it and try and keep EVE being about having fun and undocking and doing fun stuff. But it has caught up with me.
Competency is its own punishment, my friend. Well, I did this huge disclaimer at the top of the show about how, like, we were supposed to have you, but you weren't able to make it. And we were going to try to get other people later and yada, yada, yada. But now that you're here, welcome. Everyone, this is Dunk Dinkle, the newly minted leader of Brave. And before we get into how that came about, Dunk, let's give the audience a little bit more background about yourself. How did you first get started playing, and what was your path through Brave leadership?
Well, I've been playing video games a very long time, since the first days of video games back in the late 70s and early 80s, because I'm an old person. The first MMO I really engaged with was Ultima Online way back in the late 90s, which was very similar to EVE. In fact, that, you know, a lot of PvP, and if you were killed, you lost everything, right? All the things on your character dropped, and the bad guy could pick it all up, and you started over with nothing, which is very EVE-like, not very WoW-like. So I played on the Ultima Online for several years, then messed around in a couple other Dark Age of Camelot and Shadowbane, things like that. Played WoW for a little bit and played around with EVE Online, I think, starting in 2008. I played high sec mission, you know, level 4 mission runner with a group for, I don't know, a year, 2 years, something like that. and the wars of NullSec and the idea of being in these giant alliances and reading what went on in COAD and things like that just seems so far away from somebody like me. I think I stopped playing for a little bit while I was doing more FPS and RTS games for a while. And then Battle of Asakai happened, came across gaming news. And I was like, oh, Eve, I have a character there. I go back in. And I think at the time I was like, well, there's this Dreadit Corp on Reddit. I'll join them. How hard could that be? But they had a bunch of requirements about joining. And then the people, Matthias Otero and Brave Newbie, said, hey, anybody can join. Come have fun with us and blow stuff up. So I joined Brave Newbies on the fifth day it was in operation. I've been with them ever since.
Wow, what timing. And when you joined up with Brave Newbies, how did you go from, you know, high-sec mission running, which is a fairly solo experience, to kind of one of the faces of Brave? Was there a path to that, or did you just kind of fall into it?
I kind of fell into it. I mean, the group, the corp I was in high-sec, you know, we would run missions in a group. This is back the day where you ratted with Ravens and you had Logi to support them and stuff like that. You know, nobody was that good and we didn't have great doctrines and all that kind of stuff. So I did Logi for the high-sec corp. So when I got into Brave, I was one of the few people that understood concepts like Logi and ECM. I forgot to mention, I also was in the first wave of all the faction warfare on the Kaldari side. So that was my first like real PvP. So when I joined Brave, I already had some PvP experience. I had Logi experience, the kind of support roles. And so I was in the early days of Brave, it was doing a lot of ECM and doing a tremendous amount of Logi. I was one of the first, you know, Logi anchors, that kind of thing. So when you do the support roles over time, people begin to trust you. And I think just the trust kind of keeps going and the longer you're around. So I became one of the people more and more that was trusted to do things, logistical things, all that. And then slowly the leadership counted on me to do more and more and more. And then I had a, you know, I like doing social media stuff. I like doing videos. I like kind of doing very extroverted stuff. And so started making all kinds of Brave content, and I have disposable income. So I made swag to give away, and it just kind of snowballed into being like the face of Brave. And then, you know, last summer I got formally dragged into the command ranks of Brave, and then,
ran and for CSM.
I ran for CSM. Because not as much that I wanted to represent Brave, because the CSM is not really about representing your specific corp or alliance in EVE, but it is about your playstyle. And I think, as has been shown, that CCP doesn't have a great awareness of what goes on in industry and the economy. And I wanted to have some input on that. I don't know that I was that successful on convincing them of some of the consequences of their plans, but that's really what I did on the CSM. And now I found myself on the losing end of a war, leading a group, getting chased out of our former space, losing three regions in the last year. So,
yeah, let's talk about that. So we touched on it a bit in the previous episode that Pappy had announced the final push, that after a week's warm-up time, they were going to go and come hell or high water, or, you know, ultimately fail and have to retreat. They were going to push into the 1DQ constellation, do their best to eradicate goons, and if it didn't happen within X amount of time, they were going to pack it up. This was a pretty big gamble, or at least that we thought it would be, because, you know, you're kind of announcing your plan, and you're sort of announcing the withdrawal timetable as well, which gave goons a pretty clear timeline of how long they would have to hold out for. But it didn't even get that far. It was announced the day before we recorded the last show, and within 2 or 3 days of it officially kicking off, it not only was over, the war itself was over, and somehow Test like lost everything. It was incredible. I've never in my 15 years of playing the game seen any alliance or coalition fail so spectacularly and so rapidly. It was unbelievable. They went from announcing their final offensive to withdrawing, relocating away from their new home in Delve Inquirius. They're they're going to have lost because they gave up all their space in the South already to move into Delve. They've gone from like winning the war to totally evicted over the course of like 48 hours, and now they're refugees. And it seems like the coalition is in tatters. Dunk, what was that like? Well, first of all, do I have the timeline right? Is that a fair description of what happened? And what was that like to experience on your side? Obviously not in Test, but Brave is arguably Test's closest legacy ally. What was your experience with this? What was it like living through those moments?
Well, everyone's pretty sensitive right now about what is said publicly. So I'm not really going to get into a lot of the details. All I'm going to say is that I expected there to be a huge push into the 1TQ constellation. I knew that it was a make or break time, you know, that we would be in a very bad way if it wasn't successful. I personally made, 20 plus of the fabled Tengus that were needed, which is not no easy task on short order. Hundreds of other Doctrine ships, myself personally, to try and be able to build up for the expected assault. I was surprised we didn't see starting like Friday, just major, 6 to 8 hour battles of this attempt going on. So I think at some point I was told, well, it's all falling apart as far as the will to proceed. But again, you can't reveal that until it happens. So, it feels terrible, right? I mean, there's no getting around it. It's a huge loss. And, I tried to make a very public statement that was as little spin, and as honest as possible, with, everybody in Brave about what had happened. Because I think they deserve that after giving us a year of their time into this and then all this pain that's going to come, because this pain isn't going to end anytime soon for Brave, at least. So it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good waking up every morning and there's another problem, another hiccup, another this, another that, another Diplo thing that has to be addressed.
You got a lot of credit from a lot of people on Twitter and Reddit, and I think Alliance leaderships in general, about your approach to breaking the news to Brave. And I think you gave really good rationale for why. I don't know. I haven't heard your speech because I just didn't see it around anywhere. So I don't know exactly what was said or what you're able to say. But when you say there was that the will to proceed was fracturing, what drove that? What? Because it seemed like certainly the public face, that people were like,
people are just tired, right? Everybody's tired from top to bottom. And the higher up the food chain, the more tired you are, right? And, running a large group and coordinating a large group and handling all of the people who lead other groups and their special feelings and all that kind of stuff, it takes a toll. And after a year, we were facing a very difficult task, which if you go back to my videos, pretty much every video I did for the last year says, don't underestimate the goons. They just felt like it was not achievable. They could not get it done. So we're going to get out while the getting's good. And I don't know. What I said in my speech is this is, like I said all along, morale is what is going to win or lose this war, and it's going to be whose morale breaks first. And I truly expected the Imperium will to fight would be broken much sooner, right? And I said this in my little talk, kudos to the Imperium leadership. They didn't just keep the morale up. They took it to like amazing heights, and you have to respect that. So the morale to continue on the Pappy side stopped, and we're seeing the consequences now.
Total 180 from the World War B1 scenario where they collapsed pretty rapidly. I'd say it probably kept their morale up okay, but certainly not their space. There was no vaunted last stand. It was just a slow rolling retreat.
Well, I think that, they've learned a lot of lessons from what happened in that first time. They take it to heart and they talk a lot. They have a strong leadership team. I know most of their leaders well, and all through the war, we were talking about things, and sometimes we were laughing and joking, and other times it was heated, strong conversation. But they, they were not going to let this war go the same way the other war went. And they proved successful. They proved to have the right rationale.
So is this like the sort of strategy that is widely applicable, or is this an Imperium only thing? Could some other group who is under siege, who is going to get kicked out of their space, say, you know what, we're not going to do this. We're going to hole up in this system. We're going to hole up in this constellation and fight to the bitter end. Or is it just something that only works at the scale of Imperium?
I think it only works at the scale and the situation the Imperium had set up, right? They're, in my mind, the reason to go to war was about, and I wasn't involved in the initial, like, let's go to war thing, but the reason was the goons, or the Imperium, was so incredibly strong that if they weren't cut down to size now, there was no way a year from now they would ever be cut down to size. So now was the time to kind of limit their power so that there'd be a little more balance in the space universe. And then they took on the entire rest of the galaxy. Every powerful force in Eve was brought against them, and they were able to match it in every significant battle. They were able to match it. Titans, supers, in many cases, subcaps, like they were able to rally enough people. They're the only ones in this whole game that can bring that kind of force to bear. There's some infrastructure stuff with like 1DQ and the way it's set up and the iHub and the fort and all that stuff, but you can't blame it on that. You can't hinge it on, oh, if only the iHub was somewhere else. Like they have the strength to withstand it and the will. And I don't know if there's another group that could do the same kind of huddle up maneuver if the whole universe kind of went at them.
Andy?
So, yeah, one of the things you had mentioned is that it really came down to a morale war. But one of the things, at least from the outside looking in, is it seemed like for a long time, Happy was kind of winning the morale war. Like when Fountain dropped and like many, you know, goon structures were getting destroyed. Is it just that like the end goal was just too lofty? Like taking 1DQ is just too hard? Because like it seems like up until kind of the battle for 1DQ or the long drawn out battle for 1DQ, really like Pappy was winning in all the ways that you could think of. So like what kind of turned that kind of put the morale in the favor of goon?
I don't know. I'm not really a combat FC, so I'm not going to speak to the tactics or, you know, what should have been done or shouldn't have been. I just know that there were several initial approaches for several weeks of how do we get into that constellation in force and be able to fight it off. And we weren't able to get the foothold we needed. That was the whole, I don't know how many Azabels got blown up doing that, but there was a whole attempt to get in, make the foothold, and then from there just march through the constellation. So militarily, we weren't able to crack it. And then I guess the summer came and then it was like, well, what's our new plan? And again, I don't know what the kind of people planning the military offensive, exactly their tactics were, but I just know that people didn't want to sit there anymore. Every group has people who are bored with the war and want to go do something else. Like I think, you know, 6 hours after I gave the speech, people were messaging me like, can you unblue this one corp that I have a personal grudge against so I can go shoot them? Like people want to fight. They don't want to be all locked up in this thing forever. And I think a lot of groups, I think you saw it with, Original Sinners that was part of NC. They were frustrated by the war. They wanted to go do things and it boiled over and it caused a big political headache for NC. And, you know, I think every group has their people that are like, I don't want to be in this quote blue donut to everyone. And if we're not making progress in the war, then what are we doing here? Unfortunately for Brave, we don't have a home region to retreat to like some of the other groups do.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. I actually might want to get to it right now.
I was going to say, that's one of my big questions.
Pulling out to a high level, and this is looking back a couple months, Dunk, but you were a pretty vociferous opponent for the strategy of picking up all of the stakes in, I guess, Ketch, Impasse, Immensi, a few other regions, and moving into Quirius, moving into Delve, moving into Period Basis. And that process did take quite a bit of time. You know, you could argue that, you know, cost a lot of momentum. Looking back in hindsight, Do you see that as a key turning point, that cost valuable momentum or valuable time, and that if you hadn't done it, the momentum and, you know, people wouldn't have gotten as bored, you would have been able to roll through? Or did you think that had to happen for the war to get where it got?
Well, if we had moved into Aquarius fully earlier, we would just be having more space to build up a bunch more crap in our hangars that we have to now evac, right? So I think in hindsight, it wouldn't have changed the war. And again, the war isn't stopping because Brave said, we want to get out, right? It wasn't our morale. Everyone in Brave, at least before losing the war, was really feeling good about Aquarius, and we were tighter than we had been. We weren't separated by kind of this part of impasse, part of catch thing that we had before. So people were feeling good about Aquarius, and we envisioned ourselves like hoping this war went well and then we'd live here for years. So I think the rest of the Pappy coalition, to be honest, really didn't care that impasse and catch were getting rolled up, because that's not their home regions. They don't have hundreds of structures there. They only care if the keep stars stay in place, because that's kind of the route that they want to move supers along and capitals. So I don't think what happened to Brave and Ketch and Impasse really impacted the Pappy decision-making and war effort.
Well, let me rephrase. I mean, if you had decided not to move out of there at all, do you think things would have gone differently? Right, rather than relocate your alliances, just like kept pushing.
Right. Well, the situation was pretty untenable. I think that was all in the leaks, right? Is without completely pulling out of the war, right, which would be a problem politically, we wouldn't be able to defend. And then even if we were fully pulled out without the support of anyone else, the amount of people attacking us, the combination of what, Red, AAA, Init, like a bunch of people, Dreb Bomb was out there third parting whenever they felt like it. Like I didn't feel like without the support of other groups. I mean, that's the reason alliances join coalitions, that when they're under dire threat, they have friends to call on. And I realized that if we tried to defend Ketch and Impasse, we'd be doing it completely on our own. And that would result in just not having a home in Aquarius and losing Ketch and Impasse. So at the last minute, we got to move to Aquarius, and we lost a tremendous amount of stuff in Ketch and Impasse. I mean, we funded Init's Quantum Core, you know, hangar for the next 5 years, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I, from the outside looking in, I think it is very much a decision that if they had not made that choice, the war would not have gotten as far as it did. I think it would have ended much sooner. And I find it interesting from a morale perspective, and like how Eve players try to motivate themselves and try to motivate their friends, that both sides of this war ended up adopting a strategy of, we're losing just like we planned to. For the Imperium, it was floodplains and rice fields. And for Pappy, it was, we're moving into Delvin Aquarius.
Yeah, except I didn't want us to, I don't think I ever said we didn't want Ketch and Impasse, right? That's definitely my position, right? So
I think you were unique in that perspective, though, Dunk. I think throughout this war, your communication regarding motivations and decision-making was uniquely honest.
I think that's a fair way to put it.
Well, it does put Brave in an interesting spot now, which is kind of part two of this question. Now that you have Aquarius and Test is moving,
we don't have Aquarius for very much longer. So,
well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, are you guys going to try to stick it out? Are you relocating with Test? Where do you see your status within Legacy Coalition? Is Legacy Coalition as a political entity going to continue to exist? Where is this all going?
Well, so what I announced to the rest of Brave earlier this week was that we were going to be moving up to Geminate for a little bit, or at least trying to, and go and regroup there. We need to get some distance between us and the Imperium. And but even the North may not be far enough, right? As I've said publicly many times, I take the Mitanni at his word that they're going to hunt us wherever we go. But for now, we need to regroup somewhere. We've chosen to go to Geminate. there's people up there. It should be good fights. It's not the greatest space in the world. There's a lot of positives, a lot of drawbacks, but I think it gets us a little bit back to the kind of fun of undocking, having fun, having fights, and not being engaged in these kind of, you know, endless wars. But that's only a short amount of time. And I think after that, we have to see how the map plays out. I think, you know, at some point, the Pappy Coalition standings are all going to drop and reset. And when that happens, it's going to be a whole new map. I think there'll be some realignments and changes and what space is contestable now that wasn't contestable during Pappy. And so I think we have to then decide, where do we want to go? Right. I mean, look, we could still end up in an NPC region if we can't find a Sov thing and we have to just wait there for a little bit. But right now, my focus is just getting as much of the Brave people stuff safe as possible, trying to create this regroup location and then seeing where the chips fall, because there's so many moving pieces right now.
And if you're not Pluto Fraternity, Geminate and Venal are both pretty attractive these days.
Well, again, I'm just focused on getting stuff safe while we do have the Pappy status. But when that all comes, you know, the reset standing is going to happen at some point. We have to then really think about where do we want to try and go longer term, because Geminate's just a temporary spot for us.
I don't expect you're going to be able to answer this question quite as candidly as you might otherwise. Maybe from a couple months from now, it might be different, but one of the fallouts that we've seen from the end of this war has been some of the cracks and internal stresses and internal disagreements kind of leaking out onto Reddit in particular. A lot of chat log leaks, a lot of audio leaks, a lot of bitter feelings between various parties involved in Test, in Pandemic Legion. I guess, I mean, feel free to answer this however you like, but has the experience of this war and working with ProGod for all the ups and downs of that, and working with Headliner for all the ups and downs of that, and working with Horde for all the ups and downs of that, has it changed, or how has it changed your relationships with those folks? And what's your hot take on some of the leaks that we've seen on Reddit?
I think people have this idea, well, maybe I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people think that every well-run corporation, there's no disagreement, and then there's no dispute, and everyone's in lockstep complete, and there aren't heated moments, and there aren't frustrations, and there aren't the kind of stuff you see in these leaks. But it's absolutely true, right? Every group has their own internal strife. Everyone has their debates and their arguments, and I'm mad at you, and you're a shitter, and all that kind of stuff. It happens in every group, right? Including the Imperium, right? They're much better about not having it leak out, but every group has that, and it just gets revealed, right? And usually the people revealing stuff have an axe to grind, and away we go. Again, in real life, I work with a bunch of corporate executives, and I see the same kind of thing, right? The BCCs on emails, and the just the kind of passive-aggressive politics, and the stuff that's said behind closed doors, but not in email. And if, you know, you had a mind camera in a lot of corporate meetings and can record what was said, but not written down, and then you could leak your mind camera out, like that there'd be whole, you know, web pages just devoted to that. And that's what you have in Eve, is so much of it's electronic. The logs can be leaked so easy. It spills out. People see it. That said, my whole big disclaimer about, you know, it's just normal, is people say a lot of bad shit, and there's people that have made terrible decisions, and people don't treat each other the way I think they should treat each other. But that's each up to everybody's individual culture, what they're good with and what they're not good with. Did I dodge that well enough?
Yeah, good job. I'm going to make it a little harder for you, though. Specifically ProGod, a lot of people have noted some frustration with him and his leadership style. And this is probably a very simplistic paraphrasing, but kind of walking or talking the talk a lot, but not walking the walk, not often anyway. I have my own experience with ProGod that's sort of lined up with that, which is why I'm a little more primed to believe it. Has that been your experience working with him? And in general, has the way the past week and a half unfolded shaken your faith in Test as a coalition leader and PGL specifically?
Well, I'm not really going to get into any of the like personal discussions, right? Like right now we're a part of Legacy and we're a part of Pappy, and I wanted to keep it that way. And I want to work with all of them to get as much of our people's stuff safe as possible. So I think there's probably going to be a time in the future to kind of retrospect on the war. But, you know, at the time of this recording, we're less than a week away from everything falling apart. And I don't think really it's the right time to kind of talk about how you feel. And I think you need to sleep on it a little bit more. You need to get out of the heat of the fire and the emotion of the moment before you kind of go back and talk about these things.
Well, I had to ask, Dunk.
Again, I hope you appreciate my dodge.
Now, you joined a bit late, so you haven't had a chance to look at the show notes, but I gave you something for the next section of the show. Before we get there, Andy, any closing questions or observations about the end of the war? Or potentially end of phase one of the war, like Dunk has noted, Mitanni has been pretty vocal about this not, in fact, being the end, and that there would be some sort of retribution phase, a part two, where, you know, if you want to pull it into World War II, you know, this was the German army being stopped at winter and the Russian army beginning their counterattack. That's certainly, I think, how they would frame themselves. Will it actually happen? I don't know. How bad would it be? Who knows? But it certainly seems like Imperium is eager to retake their space and then potentially exact some kind of pound of flesh out of Pappy. What that exactly looks like, we don't know, but it could be a very interesting bookend to this story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have any questions or comments per se, but I think I am excited to kind of see what happens next. Like we saw, you know, the war's been more or less stagnant until the last week. It's been stuck right on that T5Z 1DQ border. And now all of a sudden we have this massive movement and this massive regression. And so I think I'm really curious to see what happens with all the groups in Pappy, like which ones stay, which ones fall out, which ones stay alive through this and kind of persevere, and which ones just kind of crumble internally. Because I think you see that at the end of a lot of wars, like with CO2, when CO2 fell, like they did a really good job for a long time. And then all of a sudden they crumbled and just disappeared. And so I wouldn't be too surprised if we see a group or two that just kind of collapses from internal strife. And like Dunk said, I agree that I think goons will be following groups out, but maybe we'll see something similar where they can only push so far before they're overextended. And will they kind of make the same mistake of continuing to push and getting to the spot where they stagnate and then fall back? Or will they kind of call it good? And so I think there's a lot of unanswered questions, especially with how fast things are moving now. But I'm curious to see how all of that plays out. And I think it's just too early to say.
I definitely think there's going to be some coalition fracturing just the way this all went down. Somebody's leaving somebody. I think one interesting thing will be fraternity's role in all of this. And this will kind of play into the next phase of the show as well. But they have been lauded as, you know, kind of a smart player in all of this, where the rest of EVE has been tearing themselves apart and they've been just kind of farming it up really hard and haven't really gotten too involved. I know they nominally joined Pappy, but they didn't really commit a lot of manpower or ships, certainly nothing at risk. So they're looking pretty strong right now, and it's going to be interesting to see if their relationship with Pandemic, I don't know. It's certainly very convenient for fraternity side of things, but I think a lot of the reasoning of going after goons, like if you don't stop them now, they might get too big to ever be stopped, could apply there as well. And they are right next door. So we'll see if that relationship maintains or if the lack of an overarching goon conflict kind of opens up opportunities for more acrimonious relations there, I guess we'll say.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also maybe a point to be made that there's probably going to be a lot of finger pointing. We've already seen some of it, and some of those fingers might get pointed towards Frat and kind of, you know, people blaming them for maybe not doing as much as everyone else in the coalition. I think that wouldn't be like an unreasonable thing to pop up in the next kind of month or so is, you know, maybe if they had committed harder, like, it would be a different story. I don't know if that's true or not, but I can see it at least coming kind of to the forefront and being something that's discussed. I think, like, not everyone has kind of listened to Dunk's advice and slept on it. And I think we see a lot of kind of emotions boiling up and things being leaked and, you know, all that kind of stuff that really is like going to play into this and potentially have kind of longer term impacts on the relationships between these groups going forward.
Well, let's talk about these groups. So there was a post out on Reddit, which is kind of cool. It was by Brack Region USA USA from NSH called Power Rankings of Respected Groups in New Eden, August 2021. We'll include it in the show notes, of course. And he put out a list of the top 10 alliances from his point of view, along with reasoning for how they got there. And I think it's a very interesting list. And I thought it'd be a fun exercise for us to do as well, just to kind of, I don't know. I think this is a watershed moment to reevaluate all of that kind of stuff. So his number one, Goonswarm and the Imperium generally, I think that's difficult to argue. Number two, Fraternity. Do we agree Fraternity is the number two alliance in terms of power right now?
I don't know if I agree with this. I think we've seen that Fraternity is really big and they can bring a lot of people, but in kind of the proper straight up wars, I think they either have underperformed for their size or have not contributed as much as other groups of the same size. So I don't know how they would really hold up if they were in their own individual war and being attacked.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is based on their like super capitals on paper numbers. And I will say from having fought them for several months, like they are the biggest botters in Eve. That's like empirically evident. But at the same time, they do have a lot of good players. It's not just bots. But I would have to say that there have been a lot of alliances of this type in EVE where they don't get involved in a lot of fights directly. They just spend a lot of time building up their super cap forces. Everyone gets scared of them. I think Xdeath and Solar were in this boat a while back. But then when it comes time for an actual fight to happen, they underperform for no other reason than they just don't have the experience. And they're either unwilling to put those capitals on the line, or they're uncomfortable doing so because they're not 100% sure how to do it and they don't want to lose their advantage. So I'm not saying that will happen with Fraternity, but what I am saying is there have been enough historical examples of this alliance archetype that I am skeptical that they will live up to their theoretical capabilities here. I don't think it would take much for me to change my mind on that, but I don't know about number two. That seems high. I definitely think Initiative and Horde, which are numbers three and four on this list, should probably be slotted above Frat right now.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it as well.
So yeah, I would probably put Frat at four on this list. Now, number five, Snuffed Out.
I think that's realistic. I would agree with that.
I think, Dunk, what's this is hopefully a group you can talk about as a Nullsec power who's not like a test goon Pandemic Legion proper alliance, but sort of in their orbits. What is your perception of Snuffed Out and their role and how threatening they are?
Basically, don't go to Losec. I mean, and seriously, they are really. They're masters of that kind of domain. They understand the mechanics and the differences in them. They obviously know which are the kickout stations and which aren't, and how they know how to flip bait citadels. They have all the tricks. This is their space they operate in. They have a lot of power. They bring a lot. They have good FCs. Like you got to be very careful not to run afoul of them because they know what they're doing.
Yeah. It's difficult to not put them this high on the list when so many other alliances regard them with such fear. I don't think they are like region evicting level, but certainly in anything that's not a protracted Nullsec campaign. I think that's definitely got to be a thing. Now, their number six pick, I think, is a little ridiculous.
It is written by someone in
it. It is written by someone in their alliance, but come on. I like NSH too. They're definitely a good alliance, but I don't even think they're on this top 10, to be honest.
No, NSH did just pick up a fairly large group, I believe, from, I forget who from, but they just increased in size recently, I believe. Potentially from NC, but I don't remember for sure.
Well, I mean, even if they did, I still don't think that's... I mean, they're second fiddle to Frat in a big way. They're not really a multi-time zone alliance. Not in a way that's competitive with other alliances on this list.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Next up is NC Dot. This is another one I'm not certain about. I think they deserve to be on the list for their influence, but they've definitely diminished from what they used to be. I think this is largely due to Horde taking up so much of the spotlight for PanFam, where NCDOT and Pandemic Legion have kind of played a backseat role to Horde. But I also don't know what other alliance would really take their place on this list.
Yeah, I don't either. Also, I just looked it up to make sure I was right there. And yeah, Original Sinners joined NSH and brought like 300 members. So they just had a large increase in numbers. They had Original Sinners as well as a couple other corps joined in the last like month or so. So I don't know. Maybe NSH deserves to be where they are. I guess TBD depends on what they do with those numbers and whether they're able to kind of leverage that or not.
I mean, one alliance we don't see on here that probably should be is Xdeath. I mean, they are a coalition leading alliance. It's not a huge coalition, but the fact that they're on here and a not anywhere close to leading a coalition alliance is, you know, I think that's sort of got to come in there. I mean, I know that Xdeath has been pretty isolationist recently, but as recently as, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago, they were doing some stuff down in the south. Next, Dreadbomb. I think this is another alliance that looks like it's going to be better on paper than it actually is. And this is maybe a little bit biased from our exit from Wrecking Coalition, but I don't think Dreadbomb by itself is that threatening to other NullSec alliances. I think they really do need RC to be acting in concert. If it was Wrecking Crew as a unit, at slot 8, sure, but as far as an individual alliance, I don't think so. They have a lot of space on the map, but that's not the same thing as power.
I mean, I think Dunk can probably talk to this specifically, but they have been able to, more or less on their own, put pressure on some of the bigger groups. Not directly by kind of facing them head-to-head necessarily, but, for example, pushing into catch when Brave was deployed, like... Dreadbomb was a major kind of component to some of the structures dying, a lot of the structures dying, and some of the fights that happened there.
Yeah, again, I'm not one. I'm not a big combat FC person to kind of judge who's good and who's bad. But, you know, they can definitely bring a strong, cohesive fleet and a strong concept and fight hard, right? And they're formidable. But again, it's always hard to match up on any given day. Like, you know, just takes one mistake and a fight goes completely sideways on you. Even if you were won the previous 9 fights, the 10th fight could go another way. So they're good. They're strong, but I'm not getting into this ranking thing of top 10. That's just, it's good for links and clicks, but I don't adhere to, you can really rank people that way.
It's just a bit of fun, Dunk.
I know, but I have to be especially political these days. You might imagine.
Sure. Test Alliance, number 1. Panacord, number 2. Number 9 spot, We Form Volta. I would put it higher on the list.
Yeah, I would too.
I mean, if they are standing toe-to-toe against Frat, you know, even if neither side isn't necessarily being 100% serious, still, you know, I'd probably put them below NC Dot. And then finally, Test at the bottom. Test's obviously still a pretty big power, but yeah, I'd have to agree they have dropped significantly both in their actual strength and perceived strength. It's difficult to name an alliance that's fallen so far so fast in recent memory.
For the sake of Doug,
again, going back to the top of the show, I've never seen in Eve where someone who's winning the war decided that the war needs to stop, and then that very announcement effectively costs them all of their space over the course of like a weekend. It's incredible. And obviously, it's because they gave up all their space to move into the regions they'd conquered, but still, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tess is still very large, and I think they're still powerful. And like, obviously, this is going to be a big kind of ego hit and perception hit, but I don't think they're necessarily have dropped as low as people are thinking. I think they, you know, unless something crazy happens internally and they just crumble, I think that they're still going to be very strong, and it's going to look bad for a while and then kind of blow over and everything will be fine again. I just think they still have enough people to kind of have that critical mass and make that happen, as long as, you know, internal strife doesn't get in the way of it, or too much internal strife. I'm sure there's going to be some.
Are any alliances not on the list you think should be? Again, I think X-Death should be on there, even though we haven't heard a lot from them lately. They're still a pretty big power. We could maybe think Army of Mango, perhaps. I know there was a lot of hype around that alliance. AAA and Red Alliance have both resurged.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of groups that are all kind of close. Like, if you cut it at 10 or whatever, kind of, I agree with Dunk in one sense that, you know, you can say, like, oh, these are all, you know, fairly large or important alliances, but I think giving them exact spots isn't always, you know, super helpful. And I think there's a lot of groups that are kind of right around the same strength, and it really just depends on what you're comparing them on. And I think that the groups you mentioned, I think Army of Mango is up there. I think Brave is obviously up there. I think there's plenty of groups that are like that, that are, you know, maybe not power players per se, but they're still really strong and would give other groups a run for their money, especially if they were kind of defending their own space and not trying to launch some offensive war.
All right, super cool. Let's wrap things up. So we're going to go into host highlights. Dunk, this is the coolest thing in EVE you've done in the past 2 weeks. For myself, well,
I just want to point out one thing though. It'll probably get lost, and I'm sure after this podcast comes out. But you and I agreed for me to come on this podcast before the decision for the war to end, and
yes,
all of that stuff. And it had been my intention to avoid any kind of streaming or any of that kind of stuff for a while. But because I agreed to you that I would come on this, I'm coming on now to do this. So if you could just make sure that people hear that I'm on this podcast simply because we agreed to it before the war ended, not because I felt I had to have a space to kind of have my views out.
Yeah. Yeah. To be clear, I wanted Dunk to come on to talk about like the final push, and I expected that by the time Dunk came on that the offensive would be in full swing, and, you know, that would be more what we're talking about. It was planned like at least a week. I think it was way, way more than a week to have you on before things turned out the way that they did. And I've wanted to have Dunk on for a very long time in general. So yeah, didn't bring him on here because he was newly elected as Braves leader. Didn't bring him on here because of Pappy falling apart. This was sort of pre-planned, but this is kind of what we have to talk about because you're effectively a central player in all of this, for better or worse.
Well, I don't feel too central, but thank you.
And we do appreciate it. Yeah, we really appreciate having you here.
As in the middle of while we're talking, I'm busy like jumping capitals out. So, you know, that's what my focus is on these days.
That's Dunk's host highlight, being able to extract his caps. My highlight was a fight we had the other day. We wanted to do a nice big hurricane fleet after our tournament practice this weekend. Unfortunately, practice went really long. By the time it was done, there was only a handful of people that still wanted to play EVE in general. But I think there was like five of us. We decided to go out, and we went with three Taluses, a solo Logi, and a Dictor. And that was our brilliant fleet comp. We filamented out, and I think we ended up in period basis, I want to say. Double check the kill board on that. But we ran into Evictus. And, it was Evictus Space. I don't know if it was actually them, because I'm looking at the the kills right now, and it was a little all over the place. But it was a really, really good fight. Short, brutal, everything that a blaster battle should be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. It looked fun. It looked like, from what I remember, I saw it pop up on the kill board, and you guys were outnumbered, but went more or less as neutral, I think, right? Or even maybe as positive?
It was definitely as positive. I don't know. It's not going to show. But the Vedmak that we killed... So, it was Esoteria versus Evictus. The Vedmak we killed had multiple Abyssal mods, had two Abyssal Heat Sinks, had a Abyssal Armor Rep, Abyssal Cap Battery, and some Abyssal Nosses in the highs. And it was like one of those things. We hopped in, we went to the staging system. Like, there, our destiny was in front of us. We thought it was clear to go through. We went, and like a small gang had chased us from the other side. And we're like, okay, well, I guess we're going to fight because this is what we came here to do. And their numbers didn't seem too bad, at least initially. So we took the fight. Initial target calling was a bit sporadic because we were both kind of jumping through the gate and decloaking kind of in whatever order we all thought was right. So we didn't really know 100% of what they had coming through. The first thing that decloaked was a Hurricane Fleet issue. We went after it. Did take a while to bring down. They do have a lot of hit points. And while that was happening, the Vedmak decloaked. I think they had a Gnosis decloak, a few other things decloaking. I went after the Vedmak to try to nail it down because I know Vedmaks. I know they kite. I was pretty close to him at the start of the fight, maybe 13 clicks. So I thought if I could get on top of him and scram web him, we could kill him after the hurricane. No problem. Turns out he was afterburner fit. Looking at most of the rest of his fit, it looked like he, you know, just came out of an abyssal site and was like, oh, I'll get on these kills. Because it looks like an abyssal PvE fit. But I managed to get on top of him. I scram webbed him down. We brought down the Kane. We start focusing on the Vedmak. His tank is tough. Like, really tough. It's a double rep ancillary and an abyssal. So, and he had a reactive armor hardener. And we were, you know, thermal kinetic damage locked with our blasters. So we're putting damage into him. He is tanking an insane amount, but he is breaking very slowly. And as all this is happening, the other Taloses are dying. The first one was practically dead by the end of us finally killing it. They had eliminated our Logi almost immediately. We get the Vedmak starting to get into structure as the other Talos goes down. I'm overheating. I'm the last guy left, basically. And I've got this huge swarm of Evictus dudes around me. And this guy is like, I'm literally taking his entire armor bar away and he's pulling it back by 75% every time. I'm starting to hit structure bleed. I am starting to hit my own structure as it's happening. And then I pop and I'm very frustrated. He's like, ah, God damn it. You know, we lost this fight. It was literally 5 minutes into our roam. And, you know, we've already lost the fight. We lost, like, all these battlecruisers, whatever. And I thought that the Vedmak had lived. Turns out, after I checked my own kill mail, I noticed the kill mail for him. It literally must have been the last cycle of my guns or maybe some drone damage that killed him in the same tick that I died. It couldn't have been more than that because... I still had him locked when my screen blacked out from the ship exploding. So it had to have been in that very tick, and we pulled him down. And on the kill board, it's listed as 378, but it's mostly an abyssal fit ship, and those don't really show up in the kill values. So it was probably closer to 750 or a billion. And that felt pretty good.
It's gotta. That's one of the sad things about abyssals is that it just doesn't show the value. So you can get really, really nice kills, and sometimes it doesn't, you know, doesn't do it justice. But at least you know, like when you see abyssal mods on there, that you know they like usually are expensive or usually from something that's like faction mod, that type thing.
It was a good fight, though. We end up being a 2-1, or we engaged 2-1, and we lost. Oh, sorry, we had 2 Taloses, not 3. My bad. 2 Taloses, not 3. So we lost our entire fleet, but came away killing a lot more than we lost. Probably a 2-1 isk ratio. And it was a good fight. So cheers to Evictus for bringing it, and that was a fun experience. Andy?
Yeah, so my shout out was, or I guess my, not my shout out, but my highlight was the AT practice that happened right before that. Or I guess I should say kind of all week. So I've been practicing with our AT team. We had a practice on Thursday night that went really well. And then we had that practice on Saturday where, you know, it didn't go quite as well, but we still did good and like practice, got some reps in with scrum partners. So it's been definitely a whole new experience. It's been my first time ever doing like tournament play of any kind for any game at all. And so it's been, yeah, it's been really unique. It's been like pushing me to fly better. And it's just kind of weird to, you know, going from fighting either outnumbered or, you know, never on kind of fair footing and then transitioning to, you know, starting prepared fights and having each team be more or less even is just such a different experience, such a different feeling. And especially against really, really good pilots, because everyone we faced so far has had really good, you know, really good piloting, really good teams, really good alliances. So it's been really kind of interesting to go against people who are intentionally like trying to fight you, who have coordinated, who are planning, who are trying to shoot for the same goal and have the same things on the line. So it's been really interesting.
I want to give some shout outs to our Golden Elite members, Mark Havoc and Kestrel Swainson, for their continued support for the show. And I also want to give some shout outs to Mitani, Asher, Jay, Merkelchen, Brisk, probably dozens of other FCs and morale support people in the Imperium that have contributed to this. But just a brilliantly managed war and morale effort. So many other alliances have been in that position and have just given up or evac'd, including the Imperium themselves in World War B1. But these guys held fast, and I can't think of another alliance that's done it that way until, like, I don't know, frickin' Red Alliance way back in the day when they got pushed back to literally their last system and fought their way back to becoming a regional power again. It's a pretty incredible story. It's a very cool accomplishment. I've got a lot of friends, particularly in Pandemic Horde and NC Dot. I feel bad that they've had to go through this loss, but at the same time, it was an incredible war on both sides. And, you know, it came down to morale, as Dunk said, and one side's morale held out, and it was a concerted effort to make sure it did. So I want to make sure those folks get some credit. Andy?
Yeah, so my shout out really goes to our whole AT team, but specifically Ovix, who's our team captain. He's just done a really good job kind of organizing things, getting things prepared, getting us practice partners. So training for that, like, it's just made, he's made my life easier. So I appreciate that. And I'm glad he's our team captain. And then also a very, very, very late shout out, but shout out to Dunk for the Dunk Deagle salvage drones.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted the tech too, so it's a great honor that we had the Dunk salvage drones.
And Dunk, any shout outs for you?
Well, I appreciate Brave sticking with me. You know, I didn't know if we were going to totally fall apart in this first couple days, and everyone has really rallied. It's impressive. I know there's internal strife and things that are going on, people being frustrated, but overall, everyone's pretty supportive of each other, so it's really good for Brave. But overall, to everyone who was in this war, again, I hope they write a book about us, because this is probably going to be the best book of the war to write about a war in EVE when you try and put this year together. So unprecedented. Just the war is completely unprecedented. And the beginning, the middle, and definitely the end. So everyone who participated, I wish I could give you a little medal for to put on your uniform.
All right. Well, that's it for us here at Declarations of War. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show's poll. Reminder that Nora is recruiting. If anyone out there is listening from the Imperium or Pappy, and you're a little bit burnt out on the NullSec grind, you're not alone. You might as well go out and take all that experience, all those skills that you've been building up, and go into business for yourself. Become a merc. Join Noir. CafeNoir.in-game for more info. That's CafeNoir. And wherever you are, whoever you're flying with, whatever you decide to do next out there in the coalitions we've been talking about, good hunting.